There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday edition of the show. And easy to get in. Well, you know, before I even get into that, we'll give you phone numbers and we'll talk about our first guest here. But just if they're listening at the national news service we use there, you hear them at what we call the top and bottom of the hour. It means at the end of 1 hour, the middle of the next hour. So there's top and bottom. I don't have anything against pandas and telling us about whatever Ping Ping and Fusackley or whatever the dang pandas on the trade here are. But like, if you stack news, right, there's like a triage list to news. And when you're bumping stories about what's going on in the Congress or what's happening half a world away in a war with Iran, and you stop to tell us about the latest for the pandas coming from China, you know, I would consider that an export. I mean, if we're going to try to we should tariff the pandas as well. If we're going to tariff things coming from China, we shouldn't beg China for the pandas. We should tariff the dang, what is it, Ping Ping and Fusackley or whatever. I'm just saying. So if they're listening to national news, that's, just want to get that off my chest here as we get started. The rest of the show is going to be great. All right. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 gets you through on a call or a text. Also, you can leave us one of those talkback messages using the FM Talk 106.5 app. And any of those contact methods, if you're upset about what I said about Ping Ping and Fusackley, you can send them there as well. Just attention management. All right, we get started this morning. It's morning for me. It's afternoon for everybody else. It's a time zone thing. We get started with Alabama State Rep, District 102, Shane Stringer, our leadoff batter today. Congressman, thanks for coming on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, Sean.
I mean, just for a second, I know this is, you know, your job is in Montgomery and it's not federal, but I mean, you know, I'm tired of begging for the pandas from China. I'm just tired of it. I mean, pandas are fine. I'm not anti-panda, but I'm tired of begging them for them. We'll see.
Yeah.
The China lobby is probably not happy with me. Oh, well. hey, another thing that's got me cranked up today is I'm looking at this. The deal set this week. Now, you and I talked a couple weeks ago, but the deal this week, as rolled out by Moss and the state, to me seems like, okay, people can, under certain rules, access Big Creek Lake, but the big question to me didn't get answered, or it got answered in a way I didn't think was right. Your reaction to this?
Yeah, I think we made some baby steps, but I still don't think it was the best thing that we could go for, but you know, I think we'll just have to continue to fight, keep moving forward. I applaud Chris Blankenship for standing up and fighting this and trying to help us with it. But I also think that we've got to keep fighting or whatever. And I understand that these kind of lawsuits cost the state a lot of money, and they are balancing what they can do and what the potential outcomes are when in these situations.
Okay, well, because I want to come back because, you know, you had your bill that was going to remove public reservoirs from the critical infrastructure list. I mean, in the way I read this, and help me, you probably have a lot more insight to it, but the way I read this is, yes, people are going to be able, under certain constraints, be able to access Big Creek Lake, right? But that, and we can go through all those details, but to me, the takeaway from it is that then that, to me, says Moss makes the decision for Big Creek Lake, therefore that water is not public. I mean, what's your understanding of the deal that was struck?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. The fact that they're able to still close it down and restrict, I've already gotten calls this week where residents that are under 21 years old have attempted to either rent a boat or take their own kayak out there, and they've been denied because they have to be 21 years or older to do that. And to me, that just makes no sense. And I think this is an overreach by a board, an appointed board, to shut down the lake and control it and do whatever. And I think there's a balance to be found in keeping our water safe and also providing the natural resources that are there for our citizens.
Yeah, and that's my question is it going to be, because we can nibble around the edges, and I understand that we are a republic built on compromise. So I do get that. Everything's not 100% one way, but we can nibble around the edges, say, well, it should be 18 that they can get the kayak and not 21. We can talk about all that stuff. And I saw some of that on social media, and I feel for those folks. But that's still nibbling around the edge of the core issue. And the core issue to me seems like a definition by this agreement that Big Creek Lake is not a navigable waterway and is controlled by MAWS. Is that, I mean, I want to keep coming back to it, but I want to get that down, that the way I read this, and I'm not an attorney, but what's your take on that in this agreement, to me, that still says that MAWS is in control of the surface water of Big Creek Lake?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. I agree with that. I think that the compromise was not really there, because you're exactly right. That is a navigable waterway. That reservoir was built on a navigable waterway, and it should still have access for the citizens. And I still don't think that we've met the core problem of what's going on here, and the fact that, I think this opens Pandora's box for other areas of the state, and I think you're going to see this in the near future where other areas of the state are going to do something similar in other lakes across the lake, and I mean across the state. We're going to have problems there.
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely there. My next question, you just addressed it, and that's the one I was wondering too, because if in this agreement that I've been trying to just digest here, on the other side of the country, but I've been reading everything, what happened this week, if I'm a reservoir somewhere else in the state of Alabama, this agreement shows me some sort of willingness of the state of Alabama to agree to hand over, public navigable waterway rights for a reservoir, right? I mean, if I'm Whateverville, Alabama's reservoir water supply, I'm like, look what they did down there. I can probably do that here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we are allowing a unelected board to control a navigable waterway is a dangerous situation. I think that that's going to allow them to set restrictions or whatever. I mean, what if they come out next and say, well, there can't be nothing but a 12-foot boat on the water. There can't be right. Certain kayaks or something like that, or certain fishing rods or whatever. So I think that the battle is not over. I think that Department of Conservation, I applaud them for getting involved and stepping up and trying to defend our natural resources for Alabama. But I still think that there was too much give in that agreement. And I'm almost certain we're going to have to go back and revisit this at some point.
Okay, that's another question. So will there, in upcoming session, is there, have you had discussions with anybody, or are you thinking about pre-filing something, and how would you address that? How would you take another bite at the apple?
Yeah, I mean, there's several things that need to be done. One, I had two bills this session. One prohibits an appointed board from being able to just shut the water system down. It could be shut down through ADM, or the proper channels can suggest or recommend it be shut down under certain conditions, but a board cannot just randomly shut it. I want to come back with that bill. There's another bill, the one addressing the lake itself and on a navigable waterway. I would like to go back and fix our critical infrastructure law that addresses that and says that if it's a navigable waterway, then that's exempt from the critical infrastructure law, and try to address that. And then at some point, we may need to go in there and bring a bill that's going to address the makeup of the board, because Moz, their customer base and their geographical area has grown so much and expanded out that we may need to look at changing up and adding, making it a different makeup, maybe of members from the county commission and other areas of the either Mobile County or even Baldwin County.
Yeah, I mean, to have it accountable to the people. If you're just joining us, talking to District 102 Representative Shane Stringer. By the way, too, Lance put this in one of the main texts we've gotten here. I like this. Listen to this, y'all. If Big Creek, Lance says, if Big Creek Lake is not open to the public at will, then it's private water, so therefore no fishing license is required. I would add, Lance, then no limits either. I mean, see, if it's not public water, then that's just a big private lake, and you can fish without fish without license and catch as many you want. So,
hey, man, found a loophole there.
See, this audience always will. All right, I want to address this. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, further on through the summer. I do want to talk about, you talked to Jeff this week on his show, and you mentioned a possible special session could happen. What's the story here? You think gambling? I call it gambling. They call it gaming. And it's not that I'm against it, but it's gambling. Sure. That something could come up and call a special session for this?
There's always rumblings of a special session dealing with the gaming issues and stuff. And typically on a hard, hot topic issue such as gaming, they do a special session to try to that gives all the members and everybody where they're all of their attentions on that one issue and they can address it. But other than rumors, I'm not hearing anything for sure or definite on it. But we'll watch and see and listen and just pay attention. And, of course, every time there's different bills. The polling that's been done shows that the citizens of Alabama do want a lottery and do want to vote on a lottery. But the numbers are not very high on people across the state wanting a full-blown every type of gaming there is. So that's the mix up. You got a certain part of the body that wants to vote on a lottery, and then you have a smaller amount that wants to vote on the gaming, and that's where a lot of the mix up comes.
Well, I mean, so we've talked about this, Jeff and I both on this show, on this station, and but the formula here is it because every time this comes up, people go, "Man, I just want a lottery." I'm like, "Okay, well, that's great," but it's not going to work, right? The votes aren't there for a pure lottery bill. I mean, you can't get enough Democrats. You have Republicans that morally are going to say no. They're always going to say no. That's understandable. That's their thing on any kind of gambling. Okay, so you take them out of the mix. Now you need Democrats. But Democrats aren't going to vote for a straight lottery unless they can bring full gambling in. So, I mean, is this just it's like a dog chasing its tail.
And pretty much it has been just that. I feel like we've had the votes a time or two to do just a lottery, but the ones that are wanting the full-blown gaming know that the chances of getting that passed independently is slim to none. So they are 100% wanting to attach it to the lottery to give it a better chance of passing the full-blown gaming. And that's where that comes into. If we were to vote on a lottery, I really believe we could pass that, but in talking to a lot of the Mississippi legislators and legislators from other areas that have the full-blown gaming, there are really a lot of concerns and worries there. And, of course, right here in Mobile County, we've had the chance to see where we've had police agencies from over in Mississippi near the casinos that have been transporting their homeless people over to Mobile County, Theodore Tillman's Corner, dropping them off. And so it's absolutely a problem over there. And, of course, with the full-blown gaming, it brings a lot of other society problems, prostitution, drug abuse, and other issues. So I think that it's definitely an important issue that really deserves a deep dive before we make a decision on it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep our eyes on a special session if it happens and hopefully get you back on the show soon. Representative Stringer, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate you.
All right. Representative Shane Stringer, our guest. Coming right back, grab more of your text and calls at 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 gets you through, and we'll talk.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 1265. Quit looking at that clock, Sullivan. 1225 FM Talk 1065 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And let me grab a couple of these texts here. John Sharp's going to join us in a little bit, and we'll talk to him coming up after the news. All right. So this, Tyler, can we have the prostitution without the gaming? On this, the question, like what Representative Stringer said, is what I've said the whole time. If you don't think there are societal ills that come with gambling, and I'm tired of this gaming thing, okay? And I'm actually not against people having the right to vote on this, but for nomenclature here, gaming is, I think, what my son does on the computer. Gambling is what we're talking about. It's okay. It's just use the word. It's gambling. It's okay. There's societal ills that come with this. If you're lying if you say they're not. At the same time, in reality, we are so close to a place where this is happening that those societal ills come home to Alabama as well without revenue, right? People, the number of people that cross over state line to go gamble and then bring those problems, losing the money for the house note or whatever, they come back to Mobile County or Baldwin County or elsewhere in Alabama. So you got to be frank about that. But at the same time, do people have the right and liberty to vote on whether we have gambling? Yes, they do. Except our system in Montgomery is keeping that from happening. And it's like almost... want to have a frequently asked question. Anytime this comes up, people go, why can't we just get the lottery? The reason you just can't get the lottery is they don't have the votes. Okay, they don't have the votes because there's a number of Republicans elected in Montgomery or representatives in Montgomery that are not going to vote for any kind of gambling, lottery, anything. Okay, so you've got to take those votes off the list. Now they need Democrats. The Democrats say, you're not going to get the lottery without gambling, okay, without the Class 3 gaming. Okay, so what do you got to do? You got to sit there and do nothing, and that's what's happened. So that's why it doesn't move beyond that. But to say there's not problems with it, no, there absolutely are problems with it. But people still have the right. There's all kinds of things we do that are not the best thing for people, but you have the liberty to do that. And that's the question here. All right, last question about Big Creek Lake. On this one, if it's turning a public lake into a private lake, is the beach next to condo owners already trying to put out a sign saying no trespassing on the beach areas of Gulf Shores? So if this goes through, what's next? Yeah, you know, we talked about that during COVID, right? When the governor said, shut down the beaches. We were shut down. We're like, well, no, that's also not a good idea. But the reason that came under the purview of the governor is that it's public, right? From the high tide line, you can walk the beach. What this texture is talking about, people trying to shut down sections of it. I don't think they're going to get away with it, but the public water, the question is, and we could get into it later on in the show, finally got some details here of what the agreement was. I'll read a little bit. This is from over at landyapmobile.com. It says, while the deal dismisses the lawsuit, it preserves the core dispute, and that's what I was talking about with Representative Stringer, preserves the core dispute over whether the reservoir is a public waterway and who will ultimately control it. Under the agreement, Maws will pay the state $100 and other goods and valuable consideration, whatever that is, for a lease running through January 31st of 2125. The lease gives the utility broad authority to regulate recreation, designate access points, and control the waters between the surface water, okay, so the top of the water there, and the lake bed. In other words, the water, the being on the water, being in the water, anything of the J.B. Converse Reservoir that we all call Big Creek Lake. So it's leased it to them. But what if you, I mean, it's the same idea if you leased, take some big navigable piece of water. Let's go to, let's go to Weeks Bay. And all of a sudden you lease Weeks Bay and you haven't bought it, but you have the right style of Weeks Bay, who's on it, how they get on it, those kind of things, that kind of body of water. Probably, you know, would not go over as well. And this is my question here. We have not actually figured out the big question here is whether Maws owns the lake or doesn't. So the problem does continue. All right, coming right back, John Sharp joins us next on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here, 251-343-0106. And you can get through on the text line. And let's welcome the Crowd Goes Wild for John Sharp from AL.com and local pickleball fame joins us now. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Doing good. Kind of any new word from the court on pickleball?
What? I went out and played this morning, and I had to pull myself out early because my leg was hurting, and that happens when you get to a certain age.
I keep up with John's pickleball successes and his injuries, so we like to keep up to date on the show there. And before we start talking about stories you have up at AL.com, I do want to talk about this because we've got a public service announcement running on the station, but I want to give you a chance here to talk about it as well. I think probably you can check the Nielsen and Scarborough information, and we probably what they call in the business index very high for Eagle Scouts that listen to this show. There's an event coming up for Eagle Scouts here locally. Can you tell folks about that?
Yeah, so if you're an Eagle Scout, I think you get a lot out of this because it's an evening of networking and socialization and whatnot. And it's on May the 5th, Tuesday night, May the 5th, from 6 to 8 p.m. out at the Bluegill. And encourage people to check it out. We got the information up on Facebook and how to sign up for it. But yeah, we're taking folks that are interested in coming out all the way up to the event, and we'd like to see you. It certainly is I've gone to it before. It's a very nice evening of just kind of networking and meeting with folks and talking about the good old days when you're in the scouting program. That's a lot of fun too.
It is, and for people to realize, too, just so you know, as you come into the Bluegill at the event to make sure you can get in, they're going to ask you to tie a bowline right then. You have to tie a bowline knot and do a quick orienteering and maybe some pioneering. You might have to lash together a shelter for the night. Then you can come on in. Or is that not – that's not how it goes?
Well, the oath, law, and the outdoor code before you even come in, right? So
I got the oath, man.
And the law down, but the outdoor code my memory needs to be.
Yeah, I'd have to refer to my notes on that. I'd have to refer to my notes on that one. it's good, but that school event coming up, and I'm going to continue to tell folks about that so they can be part of it. Like I said, I think we index very, very high for Eagle Scouts in this audience. All right, help me here. And then there were 27. What? This is something that you and I have talked about. Probate Judge Irwin's talked about with me, and the constables, the numbers have come down here. What's going on?
Yeah, you're right. And then there were 27 as a result of some legislation that passed this past spring during the session. Mobile counties, the voters will go in, take a look at the ballot. And I don't believe that's till 2028. But when they take a look at the ballot, there will be 27 names instead of 80 or more, which we've seen in the past. And so this kind of clears up the ballot for voters in Mobile County. And it was done via legislation. It kind of went through without much fanfare. It was one of those bills that there was a statewide bill that allowed, that would allow Mobile County to move forward in this direction. And then there was a local piece of local legislation that was approved as well that allowed Mobile County to actually do it. So there was two bits of legislation that went through without any problems, really non-controversial. The constables of Mobile County, the ones that are dedicated to the profession, seemed like they were the ones that supported this. They felt that what we've seen over the years with these tie-breaking outcomes got to be a distraction, got to be, kind of made the position turn into somewhat of a joke. And I think that's a frustration of those who would like to see a little bit more out of the profession. They would like to assist the sheriff's department more with various needs, such as traffic control outside of schools and that sort of thing. So, yeah, this was a way, I think, a compromise to kind of clean it up. What it does is there'll be three constables elected per house district, so that's how they determine going forward to do this in Mobile County.
Yeah, so in the and by the way, pun intended, they're policing their own ranks here. But before, it was not for district, it was for each polling place, right?
Well, per precinct, yeah, it got to be one throughout the throughout the county in every polling precinct. You're right, and it got to be where you would have people's names being written in on the ballot, and then the cumbersome aspect of it for the probate office, they'd have to go back and try and find these folks, tell them, hey, you're the constable, you won. A lot of these folks didn't want the job. You know, it became a joke. Like, let's write this guy's name.
Well, I know this story. I know one of these.
And that's exactly what was happening. And it got to be a problem. And it got this, too much time was being spent by the probate office kind of searching through this. You would have tiebreaker votes. You have to go and formulate a tiebreaker on some of these races. And all this was time consuming. It became an administrative headache for the probate office. So the new probate judge decided, let's try and change this. And he worked with Representative Napoleon Bracey, and that led to this legislation that went through this spring to kind of clean that up.
Yeah, well, anecdotally, I know the story of, and I was not involved in it, but I know the story of friends who were goofing on another friend, right, who wrote them in as constable. The person was not running, they wrote them in. They get enough votes. I don't know. It's like 7 votes or something silly like that. They're the constable.
Yeah.
They don't want to be the constable. But you point out, too, not only the time, but you in your story, you report, it also costs taxpayers, listen, y'all, $50,000 to $60,000 to deal with this.
Yeah, that's what the probate judge estimates. And that's tax money. You know, that's coming out of our pockets to go out and sounds like going out and trying to put out unnecessary fires. And that's exactly what was happening. And so that's, I think that was, when you start putting the dollars, you put an estimate out there, how much this is costing the public. I think that got some attention. Judge Irwin presented this information to Representative Bracey, and that helped propel this legislation forward. Because this has been a situation that's gone on for quite some time. But I think Mark Irwin decided, and he's been probate judge, I think, for, under 2 years now. So he decided, this was something that needed to be addressed. It was a legislative priority. And, the Mobile County delegation was presented to them, and they decided to take it up. Largely a local matter. There are constables throughout the state. I know Jefferson County has them as well. But nobody had the numbers that Mobile County had on the ballot. Mobile County simply did not reform its structure at all for electing constables over the years. Whereas some counties, like Baldwin County, they eliminated constables years ago. And so they outright eliminated the position. So it's really kind of a decision being made per county on how to go forward with these positions. And I think the hope here in Mobile County is that some of these constables will have a more focused and meaningful role going forward. What that might entail, I guess, to be determined, but some of them currently help out with traffic control outside of schools. I think that's an important position, important job for them to do. They handle paperwork as well, serving warrants. So there's certain things that they can do, but we'll just see going forward. There aren't really, there's no budget for the position. It is, you get elected, you're the constable, but you have to kind of find your niche, per se. And then that's kind of still where they're at right now.
It kind of leaves us with those people more serious about the job than somebody who their buddies got together and put them on the voted them in as constables.
Well, exactly.
So people that really want to do this.
Yeah, exactly. And I quoted Leo Bullock. He's been in that job for over 40 years. And I mean, he's serious about it. I mean, this is something that, he takes pride in doing, and it frustrates him and others that I talk to as well, whenever you have those that are trying to make a mockery of what you're trying to do. And I think they all got together and figured this is the best outcome going forward in order to maintain the position of constable in Mobile County. And so, we'll see. We'll see how this all goes. It will be a tighter ballot in 2028. And I don't think I think voters will probably appreciate that.
All right, John, I want to switch to another story. And this week I've been talking about DOJ's indictment of the SPLC and this, the allegations of SPLC paying people that are in hate groups to, like, continue in their job. And that's framed one way. You hear DOJ, you hear FBI's Director Cash Patel talk about, lays out a situation where it sounds like it was a self-licking ice cream cone, right? That it was financed, SPLC was financing hate groups so they could continue to fight against hate groups. And then yesterday I got off the air, and on X, a video from former Senator Doug Jones pops up, and he takes that to task. And you write about this. He says it's just an attack by the DOJ. What's this quote here? A pure political retribution that Doug Jones said. Talk to me about this.
So not surprising, in our era of hyper-partisanship, the reactions are so different on this indictment by the Justice Department. You're getting Democrats kind of uniformly calling this political retribution, or part of a pattern of the Trump administration to go after perceived political enemies. On the other side, Republicans are saying, well, hey, wait a minute here. The Southern Poverty Law Center for many years has targeted conservative organizations that aren't, you know, perhaps are a little bit more mainstream than, they think that they are. And they've taken issue with that. And this has gone on for years. And so you have two sides of this issue, both of them, you know, and two sides reacting to this indictment. And I don't think the reactions are all that surprising if you think about it. The Democrats certainly have a problem with the indictment. And Republicans say this is a good first step going forward to try and go after the SPLC for practices that they feel like have been, the hate watch list. They have a real concern about, you know, how certain groups are being determined to be added to that list. So you have really two sides, two political sides of the coin here with different reactions.
Yeah, I could look at this and we could pick the – I mean, I could play the whataboutism game, which I don't do much on the show because I don't think it's particularly a good method to go through. But I could say, listen, using the DOJ for political retribution, you know, happened during the Biden administration as well. I don't like it on either side. But what I do like, and Cameron Smith and I talked about it earlier in the week, the fact that this is not just decided in social media, that it's going to go to court, then I get to find out the truth here, right? Hopefully. It goes to court and the information is going to be brought out. And what were they really doing? Were they using this money for informants in these groups, or were they using it to keep these groups going so they had something to keep doing to fight them?
What I've read, too, though, is that utilizing informants is a common practice in law enforcement. The FBI has used it before in the past. And so that'll be interesting to see.
SPLC is not a law enforcement group, right? I mean, we got to say
that's
that.
True. SPLC true. They're is not a nonprofit organization. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what the argument is from the government on this going forward. But my question on all this, though, is we know how the legal system moves. The indictment is filed now. Where will we be in 2 years from now or 3 years from now politically? And will this indictment continue going forward? I don't know. And then you wonder when you start talking about the politicization of certain, cases, you know, how that'll be viewed by future administrations. It just depends on how fast the Justice Department wants to adjudicate this particular case.
Yeah, this bothers me, too. And I've talked about it so many times with October surprises in presidential cycles. When, the October surprise comes up against whatever candidate, an attempt to move the needle here, you know, when people go to vote. And then the vote's done and we're in November, and then you don't hear any more about indictments or a case. And I get frustrated. Both sides. I'm like, if you're going to bring these charges then, right before election time, then or these allegations, then go ahead and finish it. Right. Is it true or not? That's a frustrating thing. I think you're right. This could wither on the vine with another administration in the future, and we don't know the truth to it. I mean, if you're going to bring it up, it needs to go to fruition. I want to know what the truth is.
Right. Well, we do have some time now between now and the next presidential election. But again, I just don't know. We know how the justice system works. The legal system works. Things aren't put on fast track sometimes. And so especially a civil case like this or the criminal case like this is an indictment against organizations. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out in the next couple of months and see where we go and how it's viewed as far as the speed of the case might go. The skeptic in me is just like, well, wait a minute, you know, this could get drug out for a few years. And then what does that look like in 2028? You know, so I don't know. But yeah, you're right. We are far away from an October surprise still, though, as well. So,
right. Wait, no, I'm saying this is like I wouldn't say this is October surprise, but I was lumping it into the basket. You know, a lot of times these charges will be made in October surprises, right? And then they're really bad allegations or whatever. And then I'm like, okay, just because so-and-so is elected or not elected, why are we not finishing this investigation? You know, this has happened over decades out there. And I'm like, if it was big enough to bring this up, and you're trying, obviously what you're trying to do is political, but then you should be required almost to continue the, if you make the allegation, then let's take it to court.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, that's where we're at right now. We'll just see how this, you know, we'll see what the process is like going forward. We just seen the indictment this week. The Southern Poverty Law Center has made some statements, but, you know, we want to see what their response is going to be and just let this whole thing play out, I guess.
We'll watch it for sure. John, of course, we will read your stories over at AL.com. If they want to catch up with you on social media, how do they find you?
Yeah, I'm at JohnSharp99 on all the socials.
Good stuff. And tend to that leg so you can get back out on the pickleball court. We're pulling for you. I need you out there.
Well, I'm going camping this weekend, so one thing at a time.
Good luck camping. I'm jealous of that. Good. Y'all have good time doing that, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Sean. Appreciate you.
All right. There goes John Sharp with AL.com. We're coming right back, by the way, too. I've got a from the text line here, Cheese Wagon. Thank you. We have a crash westbound at the Wallace Tunnel. You get to deal with that. Westbound, for those of y'all who can't do direction, means going towards Mobile. So westbound, crash westbound, Wallace Tunnel. Be aware. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And once again, update here from Cheese Wagon on the text line. Crash westbound at the Wallace Tunnel, so take that into account. Trying to get to where you're going. All right, gives me a second here to say hi to my buddy, the professor, Ron, at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Ron, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, Sean? Keeping busy selling gold, silver, platinum, rare coins, all the usual stuff, buddy.
Okay, so let's talk about, and I want to get, you mentioned the platinum and palladium thing I'll get to in a second. Gold and silver, buying opportunity right now? What are you thinking, or where? What are people doing?
I do, because there's been so much silver and gold sold while prices have been up. Premiums are really way, way lower than they were during the pandemic. So you can get silver at a couple bucks over spot right now, and a few months ago you were paying $6 to $8 over spot. So same price, and then still it's pretty close to the same spot price, and premiums are down. So really good buying opportunity for people that want to add to their stacks.
You know, you talked about platinum and palladium as well. Taught me over time that is, because I'm always trying to understand, you know, the reasons that, you know, precious metals rise, fall, those kind of things. And you tell me about platinum and palladium. Don't look just at shiny jewelry. You said look at new cars. How does that work?
Because the platinum and palladium have used in catalytic converters, and they've been switching from palladium to platinum. And now, of course, platinum is higher than palladium. And before the switch, you know, palladium was higher than platinum. So the game there is a lot of investors do is they'll buy the cheaper metal and wait for it. The other metal to get really expensive, and then they switch over, and then of course the metal they bought on the low side usually rises up once all the different manufacturers start placing their orders on the futures for the platinum or palladium. So right now they've been switching back to palladium catalytic converters, and palladium's over $2,000, where platinum's over $2,000 and palladium's dropped under $2,000 because of the switch. So almost the top three manufacturers are all now doing totally platinum catalytic converters.
All right. Well, tell folks how to continue their education while they pick up some precious metals from y'all. How do they find you? And get a website, too, to go to.
Yeah, we're located at 2204 Government Street. We're located at 2204 Government Street. The website is MobileBayCoins.com, or give us a call at 251-725-1590.
Hey, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Scraps some from the text line. Oh, by the way, too, on the text line, somebody was asking me, a named texter going to be in the area, said, hey, heard your, who's your advertiser with the Class 3 booth for the suppressors? That is Jeff Stone at Stone Arms, stonearmsinc.com, or you can check him out in person. Hopefully you'll get to see him over there at the on airport just a little west of Snow. And, yeah, you can get it all done right there, so go see Stone Arms today. Now, a lot more text to get to next hour, plus Josh Null is going to join us. We're going to talk to him about what happened in the market this week and what might really be driving it. That's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile. Stay right there.